So, friends, this is the last full day of the retreat and the last Dharma talk of the retreat. And I wanted to present the mysterious topic of self and not self. And when I was thinking about names for this talk, we somehow have this tradition of giving names to talks. So the sense of self and the sense of not self was the first one that came to my mind, and then my mind started playing with all these concepts. So the nonsense of self and the nonsense of self, of non-self. And anyway, you get a picture, even I got confused. Rightfully so. What is a self and what is a not self, and what on earth was the Buddha talking about when he said, you not really exist in the way you think you do. This self of yours that you cherish so much is a mirage, is a phantom, is a make-belief, illusion. Delusion. Aha. Funny, we say, but I feel it. This is me. This is who I am. What do you mean? I'm an illusion. Here I am. Well, let's look at it closer. So just like we did with dukkha, with suffering, it's an invitation to understand the self, to embrace it, and then transformation is sure to come. And the transformation may be from the self to the not self, or if you like, and use another language, from the small self to the big self, to the whole world, to that which sustains everything. And it's not a thing. And it's not something. But let's go back to the beginning point. When we were around, let's say, 2.5, 3 years old, the sense of self is being constructed around this age somehow. I don't know if you remember yourself. It's so much in the language, it's like hopeless. But the child, when she starts to speak, oftentimes she would refer to herself as a third party. Like Niels would say when he was maybe 2 or 3, Niels wants to eat. Yeah, it's very common. And after some time, the recognition, or the Buddhist would say the false recognition, we lead to the statements, this is me. And the mother and the father are desperately brainwashing the kid's mind. What's your name? What's your name? Who are you? Who are you? And then after some time, 3 years, you know, he resisted. And then, okay, this is me. And from then on, a certain door is slammed. Because until that time, especially the first days, weeks, months, it's interesting to look at a small little baby that just appeared into the world. This is already, was it non existence before, when she or he was in the womb, it was an embryo? When exactly does the embryo turn into a child, a baby? But anyway, there's a spectrum here, right? And just in the first few days and weeks and sometimes even months, the baby is completely open, and she or he have no, not just discrimination, but him and the mother are one. She and the world are one. And it's such an openness. I think, personally, I think this is why we love babies so much. I mean, they're cute, okay. But they're also not that cute sometimes. But there's something so fantastic about them because they still carry this stardust from the divine. They still have this not self very much obvious in them, and I think it strikes a chord in us. Somehow it rings much more truth and we resonate and the heart goes really, we want to get closer to this quality. Wow, we can just sometimes stare at the baby and she just stares back, and it's like life staring into life. Wow, we can get lost in those eyes sometimes, forgetting it's a small little baby and we are grown-ups. Did it ever happen to you? So understanding the self, embracing it, and then, inshallah, transforming it, going into a different plane with it, the plane of not-self. So we are not trying to get rid of the self. Maybe a few words of reassurance. Don't worry. You're still going to walk out of this room very much same old self as you are. But maybe a little bit lighter, who knows? Maybe heavier, I don't know. But we are invited to take a good look on this factory that we call ourselves. What is this? What is this self? Who am I? This is actually one of the deepest questions a human being can ask herself or himself. Who am I? It's a koan. Ramana Maharshi was using it and gave it to his students. And I was practicing with these three little words for many years as well. Wow. That's a question, or rather a koan, which means there's no necessarily an answer in the way in which we are accustomed to have answers. But it's more the questions lead us in a certain direction. So we might say, this is who I am. Look, I'm here, right? So this is me, or this is my body. Is it me or my body? I mean, it can't be both, can it? Either we are the subject or the object, but you have to decide. Because if this is who I am, so I also own the body? Do I just own it, or am I the body? And what is the relationship between ownership and being the thing, right? What about thoughts? My thoughts, my views, my opinions, my God. There's a joke about Jewish people. I'm allowed. Telling a joke about Jewish people in Germany. Yes. Just the same. Two Jewish people talking, three opinions. Yeah, actually much more. But look at the opinions and the views that we have. And view, we get hold on for view, we hold it really tight, and then somebody else comes with a completely different view. And immediately something in us, oh, we feel threatened. And sometimes it, according to our makeup, you know, we either fight back or go back or whatever. View. Is that mine? Is that who I am? This is just a view. You remember I was talking yesterday about the one-liner of the Buddha, how do you protect the truth? You say, this is a view. But with views and thoughts and opinions, it feels so much more me than sometimes the body. Like with the body, we can understand, okay, we grow up, the body changes over the years, we have a few more lines in our face sometimes, something in the color changes, something in the gravity has more power on us. Okay, we see the changes and we say, my body is changing. Sometimes we say, I am changing. It's more painful here. Because if we equate ourselves, if we identify ourselves with our bodies, for example, we're bound to suffer. Also, this culture so much puts on a pedestal the youth somehow and all it has with it. And so when we fall out of this category with time, we might feel really bad that we are out of the group. Our feelings, our emotions, you know, they are keep changing. Emotions, they are in motion all the time. They move, they change. When we grab a hold of them, when we say, this is who I am, I'm an angry person. Here we are, locked ourselves into a title, into a view, into a definition. Are we really angry all the time? An angry person? Interesting. We are not our bodies. We are not our feelings. We are not our states of mind. We are not our thoughts and views and opinions. They change all the time and they change without our wish. You know, you can decide to wake up in the morning and only to feel good that day. And here comes life in the shape of a spilled coffee, a flat tire, and a horrible talk with somebody who used to be a friend, and our whole world is crushed. How much power do we have over that which we call ourselves? How much autonomy? Very little. Very little. So maybe a different look, a different view is required here. There is a mystery here. There is a riddle. We are not these things, but we are also not separate from them. And the Buddha was talking about us, the human being, that we should view ourselves. We should view the body and the feelings and the emotions and the mind as a mirage, fata morgana, as a magician trick. It's not something that is sustainable. It's not something, actually, to be more precise, that it's separate. It's not a separate thing as we feel ourselves to be intuitively. Intuitively, it's actually a wrong use of this word but let's flow with it. Intuitively, we look outside, now it's around, going to be sunset quite soon, right? And we see with our own two little eyes that the sun is setting in the west, right? She's going down, down, down. And we might look and marvel at the beauty of this orange, huge ball going down, down, down. And we really see it's going down. And we say it's in the language, the sun is setting, the sun is going down. Actually, we all know too well that the sun doesn't move. The truth is much more freaky than that. It's us who are moving constantly, very, very quickly, by the way. This ball of earth is moving around itself, around the sun, and it appears as if the sun is moving. And it's in the language, and it's in the perception, but it's not in truth. So our intuition, so-called intuition, here, it's not really an intuition, it's wrong perception. It's a distortion of perception. That's how the Buddha called it. A distortion in perception and distortion in the view. And if it's like that with the sun, why won't it be like that with this that we call self? So there is a speculative view about who we think we are. The Buddha called it the five aggregates. This is a little bit technical, or a lot technical, I don't know. Maybe he was a technician. But it's like five different separate areas in which we sort of glue them together with this distortion of perception. And here we have the physical form, right? Body. We have the whole realm of feelings, sensations, yeah? Vedana, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. We have perception. It's in Pali, it's called sanya, the way in which we perceive, and there's already some interpretation in it. There is mental formation, or if you want the technical terminology in Pali, sankara, or Sanskrit, it's called samskara, that which is concocted, built up together, and that which it's our habit patterns, it's our deep mental patterns in us that are triggered when the time comes, when the causes and conditions give rise to this. And the fifth one would be consciousness. So this five parts, this is very much in the teaching of the Buddha, these five parts is what make up the self. And this can be quite technical and dry. Maybe we not necessarily connect to this, but it's an interesting way to look at this otherwise very much attached name and form that we call ourselves. So let's talk about understanding of self some more. And maybe one of the first steps would be to notice this intuitive sense of self that we have. Can you imagine when you walk into a room full with people and somebody points the finger at you and shouts, "Here is the thief, he is the thief," or "she," and immediately something in us just go whoop, right? Solidifies. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah? Or when we did the go around the first day, remember? First night, and I asked you to say your names. There's always some kind of a small little contraction. That's why I like to do it, because it's not just. It's not the only reason at all. But I also like to do it because it brings out the sense of self very obvious to the surface, and then we can really have a good look at it. It's like, this is who I think I am. Oh my God, I should hide it. I should hide behind something else, somebody else. So at times, the sense of self is very dense. We really feel ourselves, yeah? And usually, it's when there is more clinging, more this kind of movement within. When we hold on to something, when we really, 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 really need to have something, the sense of self goes huge there. And everything else becomes a side story. So when negative emotions are there, for example, like anger, irritability, hatred, the sense of self gets more and more dense. And when it's more and more dense, it's actually like a lens. We don't really see clearly because we see through the self. It's really interesting. It's like the self stands between something in us that sees and the world and life, you might say, and ourselves as well. But it gets dense with a certain hukiyut, how would you say? With a certain...
It goes on and on. It goes on and on.
Yeah, no, but I'm looking for this word. It has this law to it, yeah? It goes dense when the clinging is there. And when the clinging is there, it goes dense. Look for the connection. And vice versa. We can sit, apropos this beautiful sunset, and we can just all of a sudden forget that we are. Forget our little troubles and big troubles and stories and questions and problems. And all of a sudden we are flooded with this beauty. And in this moment or moments, the sense of self is really light. What happened there? The clinging got less. There is less build-up of the world. There is less build-up of the self. And the construction, let's call it that way, the construction of the self goes hand in hand with clinging and with the construction of the other and with the construction of the world. And vice versa. When there is clinging operating, the self is really strong. The self is really strong, dukkha is really strong. That's how it goes. Suffering follows like a shadow. It's just there. And vice versa. When clinging is strong, dukkha is there. When dukkha is there, clinging is strong and self is strong. Look at this tripod. It's interesting. So, if the self is a spectrum, that's interesting. It means I keep changing and also according to conditions that I have no idea about at times, no decision that I make is influencing it. Yeah, sometimes it does, often it doesn't. What does it mean that I have an autonomous self that is separated from others, from the world? So the self is actually a construct. I mentioned these five aggregates. And one of the examples that I find really nice is this pictures, they used to be very popular in the 80s, maybe even here, I don't know. When they have, like you look at this big, huge picture and there's many, many pixels in it and it looks like a gibberish, you know, and then all of a sudden something in the view shifts and we see something in three dimensions, right? You know what I'm talking about? There is a percentage...
Hologram.
It's like a hologram, yeah. There is a percentage of people that would never see it, like, by the way. Never. But most of us, given enough time and something that has to do with the relaxation of the effort as well, we would just stare at these pictures and then something in the view just shifts and changes. And we see something else, yeah? So the self is a construct in this way. We go about with this kind of a hologram, actually, that exists in relations to the way in which we view the world. And the Buddha was reported to say about himself that he said, "I won't be constructed in relation to any world. I won't be constructed in relation to any world." Like the world cannot construct him anymore. He cannot construct his self anymore. It doesn't mean he didn't exist. Of course he existed. It doesn't mean you or you or you or I, that we do not exist. Of course we are here. Hello. But we do not exist the way we think we exist. Just like the sunset, it's not setting. It's actually shining in the middle of the night as well. But we turned over. We don't see it. So in Pali, it's called the sakkayaditti, the wrong view, the distortion of perception. And if you look, if you think about a rainbow, this is a really nice example. What is an illusion, actually? It's things appearing different than they are. Like, you know this anagram of fear, F-E-A-R, false evidence appearing real. That's fear, when we are scared of something. Yeah, false evidence appear real. And rainbow is just the same. It's sunlight and raindrops. And the specific location, yes, of the observer. And these conditions had to come together in order for the rainbow to appear. If you move just a little to the side, you won't see the rainbow. If the sun would be covered under a cloud, we won't see the rainbow. If there won't be these tiny little raindrops in the air, we won't see the rainbow. Where is the rainbow? Is it in the tiny drops of rain? Is it in the sunlight? Is it in our perception? No. And also, it's not outside of them. It's a mystery, told you. Another thing to take a good look at when we talk about self is the whole topic of self-definition. We are addicted to defining ourselves. Like, and it's so much in the culture. Again, we go on one of these, I don't know, events, and people call it small talk. What? It's, sometimes it's not really small, it can take an hour, but it's like, and so what do you do, and who are you? And when somebody asks you, who are you, they don't really expect a deep, you know, answer. Well, I'm the five aggregates connected by clinging, the definition of the Buddha. Well, no, maybe you just say, I am so-and-so, this is who I am. I am Lila, I am Israeli, I am German, I am a teacher, I am a dancer. Whatever you say, there's immediately the clinging is there and the identification is there. And in a way, we are tossing self-definitions between ourselves when we speak. So it's the view of who we think we are meeting the other's view of who she or he thinks they are. It's like a spacesuit. Are you in there? It's one of Ramdas' similes, talks, very beautiful. One of the teachers. We all go about in our spacesuit. Are you in there? Are you in there? We suspect, yeah, there's something real in there, but it's so many layers. And we ourselves buy into it so quickly. My God, if something in life changes and the headlines would say, I got fired, there is so much identification with that who is unemployed right now. Whoa, excuse me, I'm much more than that. This is just one description of something that happened in time and space. It's tiny. It's a tiny speck of dust on the eternity that I am. But we get identified so quickly. So quickly. I'm a middle-aged man. Okay. And what else are you? Yeah. I'm a divorcee. You know this one? That's a big one. Somebody who got divorced. Oh. How do we ever possibly think these kind of names can define us? But yeah, we are so addicted to it. We want to be somebody in the world. And it has to do with the sense of insecurity that we have. And by the way, it's based, our sense of insecurity, because life are not safe, you know? Yes, whatever was born will die, hey. And we feel this insecurity and we try to counterbalance it with many tricks and techniques. One of them is this is who I think I am, and we puff ourselves up in order to feel important and therefore safe and secure. It never worked, it never will. Doesn't worth your effort. There is a strong and based sense of insecurity because nothing is reliable in this world. Everything changes. However, the good news are that we can cultivate and develop trust that is not dependent upon conditions. And about definitions, it's really interesting also, not just about us, but about definitions that are bigger, like countries and people and religions. We call this place Germany. But the other time I was teaching here, Ilka and Michael very kindly took me to another country. It's 20 minutes drive from here, it's Holland. There we had the most amazing pancake. Holland. What makes this place Holland and this place Germany? Or, I don't know, this beautiful wild geese that were flying over our heads. Do you see them? And sort of talking in their voices, almost human. When they fly over the border, do they know they're in Holland? When they land somewhere, do they know this tree is Hollandic, is not German? I mean, these names don't mean a thing, they don't. Certainly, they cannot point out to the truth. And we need borders, sometimes we need vessels. Of course, sometimes when we have these restrictions, just like in a retreat, it brings the best out of us, it's true. But also, it's really important not to take it seriously. And what does it mean not to take it seriously? To see the fullness, nature of all things. What do I mean by that? It's a beautiful way in which Thich Nhat Hanh was trying to explain it. He said, if you are a poet and you look at a piece of paper, you see the whole world in this piece of paper. Why? Because what are papers made of? Wood. And what is wood? It's a tree made out of trees, right? So you see the tree that was cut in order to become wood, to become a piece of paper, the paper that you're just staring at right now or feeling with your fingertips. But in order for this tree to exist, you needed a seed. Thank you. You needed a seed and someone to take care and plant the seed and water the seed. So we need a gardener. And for the gardener to exist, we need the gardener's mother. And it goes back in time, and it goes wide in time as well, because so many things had to come together in order to create a factory for this wood to turn into paper and sunlight and water and air and good timing and the food that the gardener's wife prepared to him so he can take to work and so forth and so on. The whole world participate in this piece of paper. And this is the meaning of fullness, or if you want the usual term, emptiness. It's just the same. When we say emptiness, we mean it's empty of separate existence. It's empty of inherent existence. But we can also say fullness. When we mean everything is there in the mix, and everything leans against everything else. In order for the rainbow to be there, it has to be our perception, our eyes, our consciousness, to watch, to be able to see it and interpret it, and then the sunlight, and then a special kind of raindrops. It's all leaning against each other. If you take one thing apart, away, just a little bit, and it collapses, it's gone. And the self, it's just the same. It's leaning. These parts are leaning against each other and creating this illusion of self. One of the things that solidify the sense of self is the stories. With the definitions, the stories that we tell ourselves and others about who we think we are. I don't know who said it, but I find it really beautiful, lovely, that the universe is made out of stories, not atoms. But we tell ourselves so many stories about who we are that we are confusing the stories with the actual life. We buy into them. It's a view. We believe them. So we might tell ourselves that we are, I don't know, horrible people, terrible meditators, angry person, hopeless cook. Or on the contrary, we pat ourselves on the shoulders and we think we are God's gift to humanity. I hope we do. But oftentimes it goes in the negative direction. And we put these stories and these definitions in front of ourselves, so to speak, our real self, so to speak, in front of life, between this life and life. And that's the prism in which we view and sense reality. And sometimes it can be really painful when we are busy most of our lives cultivating a story and an identity around who we think we are, and then this identity is shattered. Life do that, you know, they have this capacity to do this. And all of a sudden we are not the great teacher we thought we were. We are a patient in a hospital, because this is what life requires from us right now. So where is the role? Roles, like just like anything else, are dependent upon conditions. And when one of the conditions is not there, let's say students, and other conditions are there, let's say physical pain, the person might find herself in a different role, the role of a patient in a hospital. And then if we cling strongly to the old identity, whoa, we can suffer so much. So it's a lot about flexibility also, changing roles, playing with roles, like this acrobat in the circus, you know, this clown that knows how to juggle, because he holds the balls lightly. Yeah, it's not like I'm not going to let go of this ball and the right hand doesn't give the left hand. No, no, it's mine. I got it. We can't play like this. We get rigid, we get stiff. We can't move, we can't breathe. We are confined in this jail. Some years ago, I was teaching in Israel in some kind of a course over some weeks, and to one of the meetings came this woman who was a lawyer for many, many years, very, very successful one, and her whole world was of lawyers, this mind that was really leaning in that way. And I was talking to the group about compassion, and she was sitting very skeptical. I really remember her well. It's very sweet. But she was sitting there, Nana, I'm not buying into this. Yeah, but she was interested. I mean, she came to the course, but no, I don't know about that. It's maybe for other people, not for me. And then for the next meeting, next week, she came and she took a deep breath and she said, I have something to share with you. And she looked down. She wasn't even, you know, wanting to look up to the people when she was telling the story. And apparently she went to the hospital to accompany somebody from her family who had to go to the hospital. And she was sitting there in the waiting room. And sometimes in Israel, I don't know how it is here in Germany, but we have this situation of overcrowded patients in the hospital. There's not enough room. And so they put some of the patients, usually the old ones, the old people, outside in the corridors.
Yeah.
Yeah, also. So she's telling the story. It was already late at night and they brought in this old woman in the hospital bed, and she didn't have a room. And so she was in the corridor, and this woman was waiting, this lawyer was waiting also there in the waiting room. And apparently this old woman, she was alone. Nobody was with her. And she was crying. She was in pain and she was crying. And this woman told us, she was so embarrassed to tell this story, but she said, I don't know what got into me. I reached over and I just patted her hand and I said to her, it's okay, everything is okay. I'm here, I'm with you. I think it was harder for her to tell the story than do the actual thing itself, because she kept saying, I don't know what's got into me. It's not how I know myself. This is not me. This is not who I am. I never approach strangers. Yeah, I don't do these kind of things. What happened to me? Yes. So I remember it to this day because it was such a big smile also on her face when she shared this story, and something in the definition of I'm this big lawyer who never talks to strangers, let alone pat them or touch them, you know, something in this shield was cracked actually, and the qualities of compassion, of kindness, of friendship, of care were shining through. And this is what is made possible when the shell of the ego, of the self, is cracked. And sometimes It's just like that sometimes. It will be correct only when we have some kind of a crisis in our lives. Some kind of crisis. So I told you before, never waste a good crisis. It can lead us very, very far if we know how to work with it. If we don't land in self-pity. So remember the mantra, no self-pity. Yeah. And if we agree to take a good look at the circumstances, at what happened, at how we react, at what are the different feelings, emotions, states of mind, to see them at a distance as well, to take the good, healthy measurement of space between us and all this drama, not to take it personally. Not to take it personally. And it doesn't mean to be aloof and, yeah, to not care. No, on the contrary, to let it cook us. Yeah, on a slow cooker sometimes, to transform us into something different, because it can, it has the capacity, it has the potential. It's really good to understand the self so we can embrace the self as well, with all its little ways in which it tries to protect. It's not to point out the finger and say, this is not okay. Yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. You're not real anyway. No. But to try to have these kind eyes of understanding also to our pathologies at times, and the pathologies of the others. I mean, it's a horrible word, but I think it points out to something in the spectrum. And when the sense of self is there, the sense of the other is there as well. And sometimes in the relationship, a lot can be revealed. Some of us, with different degrees of selfing, because, by the way, in Pali, self is not a description, it's not an adjective, it's a verb, rather, selfing. It's keep creating, it's co-creating all the time. It's called ahamkara, my making, I making. Yeah, it's in the making all the time, and we just take everything we can for it to exist and to grow, because again, out of the false sense of security that we try to have, that we're never going to have from the sense of self and from the world. It just doesn't operate this way. But with the others, when the sense of self is really, really strong, we might find ourselves with hearts that are closed because of the lack of understanding, like just like the pirate in Thich Nhat Hanh's poem. His heart is not yet capable of seeing and loving. Yeah. And sometimes we may find our lives accompanied with people that do not see us to a different degrees, do not see who we are, do not see who we really are. And it can board on a pathology of narcissism as well, for us and for others. The inability to see, really, to see deeply, maybe all the way down to the Buddha nature that we all have, and stop at the shell, yeah, on the protection layers, and we confuse those layers with who this person is and who we are. So, if we, we spend so long taking care of ourselves from the morning till night. It's so much about being busy with ourselves all the time, but so many people with hand on heart don't even like themselves. So for who are we working so hard? Excuse me. Oh my gosh, this is the teaching of not self asks us to know self very well. The self that in the conventional, you know, word, who we think we are. And then we can go deeper and penetrate in different corners and actually make holes in this seemingly one thing. This is who I think I am. Transforming the self is transforming it into something that is not self, not confined, not jailed. The seed, there's a beautiful saying, the seed will never see the flower. The seed will never see the flower. And in a way, something has to die down in us in order for something else to arise and be known. And I was talking about the practice of holding ourselves lightly and the many ways in which we can understand the not self, like seeing the thoughts come and go and it does not, they do not obey whatever we want them to do, and the body sensations and so forth. This is a very powerful practice. It's one of the practices, actually it's the only one that one of my teacher gave in Bombay, Ramesh Balsekar. Just sit at the end of the day and think about all the things that happened to you during this day and choose one thing that you're sure it was your decision, your free will. And investigate it. Investigate it thoroughly. How did it start? How did it continue? At every given moment, did you choose to have this thought, this emotion, this feeling, this conclusion, this view, this reaction? Or was it the world combining and the inner world combining and just giving rise to this flower that in a wrong way we say, I did it. I took this decision. Really interesting practice to look, and it's another angle to understand not self. So what is it that we can trust? Is there anything that we can trust in this ever-changing world? If we are not who we think we are, and everything is unreliable, the words of the Buddha, and ever-changing, where can we find our trust? What is the real self here? And there is a written, engraved in stone, a written sentence engraved in stone in Edirne, in Turkey, in one of the mosques, an ancient one from a few hundred years ago, actually. When the time comes, nothing will protect you. Not your children, not your cattle, not your houses, not all the richness that you gathered in this life. Nothing will protect you but your heart that would be open, but the openness of the heart. So when the Buddha was talking about us as human beings and the potential we have for liberation, he was going through the cultivation of the qualities, the good qualities, the ones who are leading us to freedom. And these qualities are what is being manifested through us. And if we need to count on something and to trust something, we can trust those. The more we give it time and love, the more it will pay back with love. The more we give time and love to our greatest potential, the more it will come to be in our lives right now, not sometimes in the future, now, here. And I would like to end with this beautiful quote of Marianne Williamson. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small doesn't serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So whoever we think we are, self or not self, please shine. Please step forward, say yes to life with care and love and lightness and respect, and allow life to meet you just in the same way.